What's up? It's Joe Crest here. And look, I also wanted to say thanks so much for watching the show. That means a whole lot to all of us out here. But I want to give you a little dad advice before I get out of here, okay? Don't go out there.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Destin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. Really appreciate y'all listening. We hope you've been enjoying our series reviews. I've been having a good time. I think my co-host would agree as well. It's been really fun checking out these new TV programs. As I say, my old man voice programs. We're going to be continuing with True Detective Season 1, Episodes 3 and 4. This is Brian's pick. Brian, you want to give your quick thoughts on 3 and 4?
Two amazing goddamn episodes, I'll say that. 3 is fantastic, but 4, holy shit. Probably my favorite episode of the series. Both over a 9 on IMDb. Hell, I think 4 is almost a perfect 10, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a 9.6.
Yeah, just outstanding cinema all the way around here this week. Speaking of this week, Woody Harrelson week for us, right? I mean, with this over on the movie review podcast, Zombieland. I mean, what a good goddamn week. I'll tell you what.
I love it when we have Woody's on the show.
Now, Dustin, tell everyone what you sent at 9:30 last night in the group chat.
You know how my brain works. I got CTE. Let me find it, though.
Okay, I got it written down. True Detective is the most impossible thing I've ever taken notes on. Fuck you. But also, thank you, Brian. Had me cracking up. But also, it's so damn true, right?
It's funny you said that, because when Nico threw to me for my general thoughts, I didn't remember what time. So when you said what time I texted, I was like, I don't know. But I was going to reference that. So yeah, you're right. Go ahead, Nico.
Brian, you can just sound clip 2 great goddamn episodes and just play that at the beginning of the next 2 shows covering the next 2 episodes. I think all 8 episodes are great. I don't know which one's my favorite yet. Honestly, 4 is not my favorite. I can't remember. It's one of the later episodes that's my favorite. Like, once all the shit starts happening, and I'm not going to spoil it because I know Dustin's not there, but every episode I would say is probably at least a 9 for me or higher. So I'm in there like swimwear, brother. Dustin, you got any thoughts?
Yeah. Fuck you, Brian, but also thank you. So this show, you know, it's impossible to take notes on sometimes because a lot of it, and I said it last week, I'll say it again, a lot of it's just standard, typical police work that you see in movies and TV shows, but it's not standard in the way that it's like, oh, I've seen this before. It's really good. And I think that's because the writing is great, of course, but also, you know, Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey do such a good job together. You mentioned it, Nico. I haven't watched the whole series yet, but I did watch ahead before we started tonight. I watched episode 5. So of the 5 episodes that I've seen, I agree with you, Brian. Episode 4 is my favorite so far, but I'm sitting at a 9 or higher on all of them so far. So just really good shit.
It's the last scene, man. It's that last scene. I love it so much.
Yep. Same. So my favorite kind of movie is like gang movies. Like I love mob movies. In my living room right now, I've got a poster for the movie Scarface hanging up, and I've got a poster for the movie Training Day hanging up. That last 10 minutes of the episode or so feels like I'm watching fucking Training Day. Like, it's so damn good. So that took it over the edge.
I've never seen Training Day.
You haven't?
No, I haven't.
Picture my surprise. Picture my surprise when you said that.
All right, guys, are we getting to the scene by scene? Episode 3, The Locked Room. The episode starts with the detectives and other officers taking pictures of the painting on the abandoned church wall. Russ and Marty attend a tent revival as Russ questions the IQ of the people attending this service. Marty grows annoyed with Russ' superiority complex over these people. Pastor Joel continues as Russ continues to critique religion, and Marty walks away shooting a bird to him. Russ talks to the detective saying fulfillment and closure aren't real. Marty asks Joel if he recognizes the girl in the picture. They recognize her from Eunice. He says he's been preaching for 20 years and came up under Billy Lee Tuttle. Tina describes a tall man she was with. He had shiny, burned skin around his jaw. Russ asks Bert about his previous crime, public indecency, and asks Joel to vouch for his whereabouts. Joel asks if she was raped. If you speak to Bert alone, I believe you'll be adequately convinced of his innocence. Russ compares preachers to shrinks, selling hope at the end of a tunnel to make a buck. The two detectives walk out the room. Russ exits the RV and talks to Marty, saying everyone clears except Bert. It's revealed, though, that Bert had his balls cut off with a razor, and he shit himself when embraced. Bert says he saw the tall man, too. The two detectives drive off, and the churchgoers help push through the grass. All right, Brian, that's the opening set of scenes. What'd you think?
Okay, so first thing, I don't think we said last week, but in contrast to The Walking Dead, and I use that as an example because that's the show we've done before this, depending on when you're listening. But in contrast to that, and something very rare, I'm pretty sure, for any of the shows that we're going to be doing moving forward, but we have the same director for all 8 episodes this season, Cary Fukunaga, who mostly produces because, besides this, I mean, he did the great Bond movie, No Time to Die, and just recently the Masters of the Air miniseries. But otherwise, he's definitely, I mean, he picks his projects. It's very few and far between. I brought that up because it definitely affects how something is shot, in my opinion. I think Flanagan and Hill House is the only, I guess, other weird outlier where every episode seems not only shot different, but also with the same director the entire time. Just throwing that out there, too. And I think we did bring it up last week, but man, this atmosphere is so fantastic. I mean, it feels like the bayou all throughout. It feels like Louisiana. It feels gritty, and that's something that they continue to do a great job of, at least through next season as well. It's something I love about Nick Pizzolatto's shows. Fun fact, season 4 was the first one he didn't write, and recently actually got in hot water about some Instagram comments saying that it was disrespectful and a hot mess. But anyway, that's another sidebar. Atmosphere here, chef's kiss. Shout out Shea Whigham playing the minister. My guy is in everything. And also, sidebar, looks exactly like Steve Zahn to me. I don't know. I have a problem with that.
I thought that too, actually. Because okay. I paused the show and went to IMDb. I was like, is that Steve Zahn?
Hey, I did the exact same thing, and I've seen this show before. More fantastic dialogue between Russ and Marty. I mean, Marty saying, can you see Texas up on that high horse of yours? And if the only thing keeping a person decent is divine word, then that person is a piece of shit. I don't use $10 words like you. I mean, the dialogue between these two is just, it's unmatched. It is so damn good.
Yeah, so we get a great look at the Louisiana scenery to open. I agree with you, Nico. Like, they do a good job of making this feel like Louisiana. And I love that it picks right back up where we left off in the ruins of the church. That was great. However, I don't appreciate Russ's condescending tone when he's talking about the congregation. That was unnecessary. As was their language inside the, you know, I know it's not a traditional church, it's a tent revival, but the language is a little coarse. Flipping the bird was unwelcome. And I take special exception to the use of the Lord's name in vain while they're at the revival. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. A lot more, like I said, good but standard stuff with the two talking to the preacher and doing their detective work. Nothing groundbreaking, but it's very well executed. To me, though, it was very easily predictable that Bert didn't have anything bigger than a pigeon wedge in his bag. When Terrio asked if she was raped and then insisted Russ talk to him alone, I knew that was the case. not necessarily a bad thing, but it was predictable. Took away the shock to me. But this is a good open, but a bitch to take notes on.
Not that it's a bad show or anything. It's just impossible to take notes on.
Yep.
But anywho, the two are eating, wondering if there's a connection to Marie Fontenot. Marty calls Rust obsessive. Rust calls him obsessive too, but not for the job. And he drops a great line. People incapable of guilt usually do have a good time. Love that line. Marty says they'll put out an APB for a tall man with facial scarring. Marty is being questioned, and he admits Rust was right. Rust and Maggie are talking about him picking up the pieces of his life. He thinks he is better. She thinks he's just used to it. Marty gets home, noticing his truck in the driveway. Marty is annoyed Rust mowed the grass and follows him outside. He questioned why is he here and when I'm not home. Rust asks, what's the problem between the two? He tells him to never mow his lawn. He likes doing it. And Rust walks away and leaves. Marty and Maggie talk to Audrey about her drawings, where she got the idea. She begins to cry and flash forward. Marty is telling the detectives of being a father. We see the drawings and they're very sexually explicit. Maggie tells him she's very concerned. He says he's going to work less and be around more. She tells him she's close and wonders what all the space is between them. He apologizes for not being there, taking it all for granted. She asks what's he been doing. Work, home, cases. I think I'm all fucked up. She confirms he is, and they hug. The two start to get intimate now as Marty spaces out with the detectives. He tells them about pulling hospital patients, asking which of them were the box man. Marty admits he was good, but not as good as Rust. All right, Brian, this next set of scenes, what'd you think?
So, Fukunaga's shots. I mean, everything is so damn interesting. And they have to be because, I mean, there's so much dialogue. Harrelson, McConaughey, I mean, they're so damn good with their delivery. But every single bit of that dialogue seems realistic. And if you combine that with those camera shots that we're getting, it's almost like an action movie, which I know that may seem like a weird comparison, but the way that these two, they go back and forth at each other is like verbal sparring. And it's just, it's so damn interesting to me as it's as interesting as watching a kung fu fight scene or something. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. It's so damn good. I mean, this thing won 5 primetime Emmys. One was to Alex Fogel, the casting director, for outstanding casting for a drama series. I don't think that there's ever been a more deserving award in the history of mankind, I don't think. The casting in this show is absolutely phenomenal. Shout out to Woody Harrelson, too, for eating this entire scene as well. We all know that's a pet peeve of mine. And hopefully they got through on minimal takes, so he didn't have to eat as much. But my guy eats the entire time, and there is definitely liquid in that cup that McConaughey is drinking from the start of that. Supposed to be coffee, I guess, but there is liquid in there. Realism. I love it so much. Something I did think was odd, though. It's never explained why Rust needed to borrow the lawnmower because it showed his apartment and he doesn't have any grass. So not real sure why he borrowed the lawnmower there. I don't know. And we talk about Harrelson and McConaughey, but I was just as entranced at the back and forth with Woody and Michelle Monaghan. I mean, she's so disgusted with him and he knows it. And you can tell by facial expressions. You can tell by the facial acting. And again, Alexa Fogel, casting director. Holy shit, you're the man. Or the woman. You killed it.
Yeah, good dynamic again from Rust and Marty when they're eating. You can really get the sense that their relationship won't be built to last, and there's a lot of tension beneath the surface. And I know one thing. I wouldn't want McConaughey around my wife and a wife beater. Get lost, bucko. Then he found out that he mowed their lawn. I was really hoping that Woody would quote himself from Kingpin. You don't mow another man's lawn. I mean, he paraphrased it, but I wanted that exact quote. That would have been perfect. Nico, Kingpin is a great movie. You need to watch it someday.
I've seen it.
It's fantastic. Don't tell me if you don't remind me that you didn't like it. Great subtext in the line. Okay. Great subtext in the line he did deliver, though. I don't want you mowing my lawn. I like mowing my lawn. He's like saying, don't fuck my wife. I like that. That was good. Marty and Maggie's argument in their room was a tough conversation, but I was just amazed at the fact they seemed to have a realistic sized bed. Bravo, True Detective. Y'all noticed that? That was a big ass bed in that room. I loved it. But that's a tough conversation for any married couple to have. Great save by Marty at the end, though. Pull on her emotions to buy an out of the argument and turn it into sex. That's a pro move. Tip of the cap. Great transitions. Great transitions back to present day, and then a great segue to Rust interrogating the suspect. This is another really solid set of scenes.
Dustin never changed, brother. Rust Russ is interrogating a man with scars on his face. The man is weeping as he's being accused of these crimes. Chris admits he's weak. Russ says he's exactly how the Lord made him. There's grace and forgiveness for all. Russ gives Marty a nod of disapproval. Russ begins cutting up a beer can with a knife as he describes his process of interrogating people. He says he put insomnia to good use as we see him working late into the night, researching cases and victims. Russ' alarm goes off and he parks at Longhorn's. Russ walks up to the table and says hi to everyone. He sits down and is awkward until he's asked what synesthesia is. I think that's what it was. Shit hits the fan for Marty when he sees Lisa at another table with a man. He leaves to go get another pitcher of beer and gives her a death stare. She joins him at the bar and he asks what she's doing here. Marty is very jealous, asking her what she wants him to do. She says they've ran their course and she walks away. He takes two shots and Maggie stops him, saying she wants to dance. Russ and Jennifer hit the dance floor as well. Marty is visibly disturbed and Jennifer asks Russ about living in Alaska and Paris. They're cutting a rug as Lisa and her man leave. Russ admits he's never been in a room longer than 10 minutes without knowing if they did it or not. Marty calls Russ a coonhound, and the detective takes offense to the term. Marty said others had other things going on in their life. We see Marty outside Lisa's door pounding it, causing a scene. He breaks through the door and attacks her date. And this is funny to me. He asks him if she sucked his dick, and he eases up when he says, just a little. He leaves the place saying he's not a psycho. Russ is at home sitting in a lawn chair looking at crime photos. His phone rings, and it's Maggie. She tells him Garassi caught something and puts him on the spot, asking if it's true. She asks if he took Jen home and says there's comfort there if he gave it a chance. He tells her to go to bed. Marty will be home soon and hangs up. Marty walks in down bad, and Russ says he thinks he found another girl. He shows him the drawing on her, and she was positive for meth and LSD. He wants to go visit her grandpa in Pelican Island. Quesada permits him to investigate, but they only got 2 days. All right, Brian, go ahead. This is the next set of scenes.
Yeah, I don't have much on this set of scenes, but just at the start of this, especially some very simple but standout shots to me at the start where Russ is in the file room and the camera pans from left to right. But we get that cut just before we hit the new row of books, like showing that passage of time. Again, very simple, but very damn effective. And it stood out to me. And even how we were on the dance floor with everyone at the bar, like panning from one couple to the next without cutting, going from one conversation to the next, all done with one camera, just golden. I thought those were golden. Stood out to me for sure. But God, at that bar scene, you know, watching Marty just self-implode, like, you know, it's so hard to watch because, I mean, like, that's the train wreck that you know is coming, but you can't look away. Just so damn good. But then it all comes to a head when he shows up at Lisa's house drunk, and I was laughing my ass off at what you said, Nico. Like, all he wanted to know is, did she suck your dick? Just for a little bit. I was dying laughing. Plus, you have the 2012 interview, Marty, like, talking at the same time about how Russ needs a family and boundaries while it's showing that. Fantastic writing. It had me cracking up. And the only other thing I wanted to mention, Joe Crest, Detective Dimma. Not a big role, but he is a friend of the show, and he was the dad in Stranger Things and in the Purge TV series. So, friend of the show, just want to shout him out. I saw you, brother. I saw you in the set.
Okay, so interesting seeing Russ work the suspect. He's good. He's patronizing the guy and doing going against his own beliefs, invoking God's name and will here. That's some real good detective work there. And boy, Russ knows how to fumble the bag, don't he? Hot-ass woman lined up for him, and he stumbles over with the same disheveled look as when he showed up for dinner at Marty's the first time. And then he about bored me to sleep with his conversation. I was thinking, I just know her snatch clamped shut, but she seemed to be into it somehow. I laughed at how Marty poured the beer back in the pitcher, though, when he was like, no, I'm good. Like, he just picked his glass up and dumped it back in. That was funny. Marty is one messy bitch, though. You can't be talking to your side chick while your main is right there in the same place. Then he keeps looking over at her like he's asking to get caught. Idiot. I love how uncomfortable Russ looks while dancing. Like, his hands were stiff. His fingers weren't even touching her. And he kept looking around the room instead of at her. I laughed. Like, my man does not know how to work the ladies, it looks like. Then Marty lost his damn mind. I'm not a psycho. It's a little too late to convince anyone of that, buddy. But I, too, laughed. When he's just like, all he wanted to know is, did you suck his dick? And that was enough to be like, well, she's dead to me. She belonged to the streets. I'm out. And he went cold turkey on her. Holy shit. I'm excited to see how this one finishes up.
Did you say snatch clamped shut?
Was that what I blacked out. What just happened?
Just double checking. That was what you said.
Okay. All right, guys. Here's the finale for this episode. They're heading to Pelican Island, and Marty asks if a man can love two women at once. Russ doesn't think a man can love the way it's supposed to be. Marty asks Russ if he wonders if he's a bad man. Russ says he doesn't wonder. We keep other bad men from the door. They park on a bridge and spot the girl's grandpa on a boat. They question him, asking when's the last time he saw his granddaughter. She ran off with that Ledoux boy. Says his name was Reggie Ledoux. Father was Bart Ledoux. She went to school at Light of Way. Marty asks if he has any possession of Rianne's, and he questions if she didn't just drown. Marty says the grandpa reminded him of Rust. Rust looks through the yearbook, and he notices the school is part of Tuttle's foundation. They get to the school, and Rust asks the guy mowing grass about the school. Marty gets a radio about Reggie Ledoux. He tells Rust he just got the job of mowing grass here. Rust goes back to the car, and Marty says he skipped out on parole 8 months ago. He's got a stat rape charge, busted for a connection to a meth and LSD lab. And guess what? His last cellmate was Charlie Lane. Marty is impressed, and Russ puts out an APB on a Reginald Ledoux. Marty and Russ are sneaking around a property as Russ talks about reading the eyes of victims in pictures. Like a lot of dreams, there's a monster at the end of it as he starts to cut another beer can. We see a tattooed man in tidy whities with a machete as the episode ends. Brian, what did you think about that ending? I really liked it personally.
Yeah, fantastic. And I was dying laughing at the first first part of this in the car where Marty has a real moment, and he says, like, you think a man can love two women or women? And then Russ just starts in on his rant about men not loving. And you can actually just see it in Harrelson's acting. I mean, the sheer just regret from even trying to even talk to him. I mean, we've all had those fucking conversations. So I just love it. I keep going back to episode one and my favorite line of the show. Stop saying odd shit. It still cracks my ass up. And, you know, not saying that the rest of the episode was boring by any means, not by a long shot, but the tension, everything starts really amping up here at the end, especially with Russ and Marty and their interviews, you know, telling the detectives about the gunfight, which, you know, was a funny line. How the fuck are you going to know what I'm talking about if you've never even been in a gunfight? And then Russ saying, it reminded me of my dad talking about Nam. Like, your blood pressure watching it like starts ramping up here, as you know, it shows the house, even that soundtrack starts amping up. I mean, showing those dead bodies with McConaughey's voiceover about letting go at death, really, it really ramps you up for the next episode.
Yeah, cool seeing them get another lead. Like, kind of feel hopeless in the case for small stretches because nothing seems to lead anywhere. The Ledoux lead is very exciting for me. Very tense stuff when Russ is talking about the last nanosecond of the lives of the victims and how they let go. The score was perfect, as were the cuts to the other scenes. I thought that was really well done. Then the look at Buddy in the mask right before the episode ends. Man was preparing for the Freak Bowl Olympics. What the fuck was that about? I'm excited for the next episode here, so this has to be considered another great one.
Absolutely. You guys got any fun facts or anything you want to share about episode 3 before we move on?
No, I can't imagine having, you were going week to week on this, and you know, you got that as the finale, and you got that shot of the dude in his fucking whitey tighties with the gas mask, and then bam, you got to wait a week to find out what the fuck happens next. Like,
yeah, that's kind of how I'm doing it. I mean, I watched episode 4 right after, but I waited a few days to find. So I don't have a fun fact, but I do have something that I had to get off my chest. It's funny to me that this show features the last names Thériault and Fontenot. I mean, those are prominent names in Louisiana, I know, but my mind instantly went to the 2005 to 2010 Cubs, which featured Ryan Thériault and Mike Fontenot. That's just my sports brain at work. Like, I instantly thought of those two former Cubbies.
love that, brother. I'm going to need a David Arquette connection by the end of the series. By episode 8, I need one at least. I know you can do it.
Yeah, that ain't no problem. That ain't no problem.
All right, guys. Episode 4, Who Goes There? The episode starts with Rust and Marty questioning Charlie about Reggie. Marty thinks Charlie had Reggie take out his ex-wife. He admits he showed Reggie pictures of his ex. He says he's a cook, a chemist. He tells him of this place down south where they worship the devil and they sacrifice kids. Reggie has a brand on his back like a spiral. They both know Tyrone Weems. Russ says he probably had something to do with getting Dory killed, showing him the pictures of her. The two drive away and say they must find Tyrone Weems. Marty found it very weird Reggie had no family. That's very odd in Louisiana. Marty is on the stand and Lisa writes down his words. She chases him down after court wanting to talk. She's pissed, saying he needs to respect her, and he leaves on an elevator. Russ and Marty are telling the office about Reggie Ledoux and Tyrone Weems, telling them to get to work. The two question Teresa Weems about Tyrone, but he's been gone for a while. She tells them about Kelsey, who they question, but she provides little help. Marty questions the bartender about Kelsey and must use his cop status to get him to open up. Marty gets home and sees luggage and a note. He's pissed, realizing what Lisa did. He calls her, asking what she told his wife. The two call each other some bad names, and Marty calls Jake, asking to talk to Maggie. He won't let Marty talk to her and hangs up. Marty asks how many exes they had and admits to the detectives that he's made some mistakes in the past. All right, Bryce, opening set of scenes, what'd you think?
Well, this fucking episode, like, it's the halfway point of the series. Like I said, my favorite episode of the whole thing. And, you know, I talked about those Emmys the show won, you know, last episode. But another one of those five Emmys that they won was Outstanding Cinematography to Adam Akpaw for this episode. And Outstanding Directing for this episode. Fucking amazing. You know, especially in the last set of scenes. Now, this set of scenes, shout out to Brad Carter as Charlie Lang. I thought he acted his ass off during this interrogation. I mean, there's a little bit of a fuck up too here. Towards the end of the scene, Lang is sitting and straightens up. The top of his head disappears. It's an obvious CG shot, but for whatever reason, and he put his head out of the frame. Quick, but you can definitely tell if you're looking for it. Line that made me laugh from Charlie. What the fuck ever, man. I don't listen to what he say, but he's big, so I don't tell him to shut the fuck up neither. I feel that. But then Marty, you know, sitting down next to him saying, gotta be tough with someone spouting insane shit in your ear all day long and then looking up at Rust. That'd be rolling. True Detective, man, I think it's just, it's so damn standout to me, at least Pizzolatto's the three seasons that he wrote. But how many times have we said during movies or whatnot that they just don't stick the landing? You know, this season, like, you know, like those, they build you up just so damn much and this sticks the landing. And I think that's just, that's so damn rare. And I think what makes this so good, Pizzolatto also had a cameo here as the bartender at the strip club as well. Made a joke in the commentary that he was little wrong. Funny guy. Go ahead.
All right. So first of all, I do want to say that in 2010, there was a short release called The Cove, My Friend Is. Apparently it was about like celebrities coming together to save Japan's dolphins. I mean, there's a lot of big names in it. James Gandolfini, Mariska Hargitay, John Leguizamo, Paul Rudd, Russell Simmons, Ben Stiller, but also Woody Harrelson and Courtney Cox, who used to be married to David Arquette. Boom, Nico, didn't take me long at all. As for this episode, though, The Cove, My Friend Is nowhere to be found, by the way. I couldn't find shit about it. Great open with Charlie. Just a great scene with a lot of good info. And I love that Russ said that they're not giving him the Oscar no matter how hard he tries. That was awesome. I agree with Marty. Russ didn't have to tell Charlie it was his fault. Sheesh. I mean, that man's already fucked for the rest of his life. And then he guilt tripped him like that. But then Marty turned stone cold killer. Absolutely brushed Lisa off and told her to kick rocks and flip flops. Hell yeah, brother. And perhaps the least shocking moment of the series, though, Marty's wife leaves him. Who could have predicted? But then Lisa fried Marty's ass up on the phone, son. She called him a wet noodle whiskey dick faggot fuck. That is a burn, my lord. Holy shit. But very good open to this episode. A lot happened, and I loved it.
Yep. All right. All right. Yeah. All right. That's what she said. Right, go ahead.
I mean, I was just quoting what she said.
All right. Marty is watching some women and follows one in his car. Man is drinking like a fish in pursuit, and we make it to a junkie rave party. He continues stalking the girl and finds Tyrone Weems. He bashes his head into the wall and pulls a gun on him, asking where Reggie Ledoux is. He doesn't distribute anymore. Only cooks for one group now called the Iron Crusaders. He tells him to close his eyes and count to 100 out loud. Marty walks away and calls Russ, relaying the information. Marty hangs up, saying he's busy. Marty tries to talk to Maggie at her nursing job, but she calls him disgusting. He apologizes, saying he's a mess. She says she doesn't give a fuck about his goddamn feelings. A doctor checks on Maggie as we cut to Russ looking through a box full of guns, grenades, and Dustin's personal favorite, Jameson. Russ gets a call and shows up to the hospital and calms Marty down with work talk and escorts him out. He tells her he loves her and he ain't giving up. They're at a bar and he says he needs another shot. Russ says this isn't his business and doesn't want to hear it. Bro, don't give a fuck about his feelings. Russ tells Marty he knows that bike club and let's go to work. Marty drops a great line saying Russ is the Michael Jordan of being a son of a bitch. He shows Marty his jacket and his gun box. Russ tells Marty he needs a couple weeks personal time to make connections, drop some lines. Badges won't get them close to these people. Russ describes the way the cartel would kill people. Tape you to a chair, cut your face off, shove your dick and balls down your throat until you bled out and you watched it all in a mirror. Marty asks if he's sure he wants to do this. Not exactly, is his reply. Russ gives himself a shot of ink and cayenne to irritate the skin. Russ says he needs good coke and tells Marty not to worry about where he gets it. All right, Bryce, next set of scenes, what do you think?
Can we talk about a party in which they're wheelbarrowing people out when you're walking in that are passed the fuck out?
That's just a typical tailgate in Tallahassee, son.
Yes. No wonder you guys were hungover on Saturday. Anyway, holy shit, that seems intense. But it's the shots for me. It's the camera shots, I mean. The shots of Marty standing there throughout the place, backlit by sparks flying overhead and behind him. I thought that was absolutely beautiful shot there. And close your eyes and count to 100 if you can. That little jab. I never heard that before this watch through. I wrote it down because that was fantastic. And was it crazy to anyone else that while Russ was going through his John Wick little stash from his undercover days, like the dude had whiskey, Coke, not Coca-Cola. And fucking grenades in there? What? I was like, what? And this convo at the bar between the two, I mean, the dialogue is amazing. Like, I'll let Dustin touch on the specifics of the dialogue, but I love it. You keep raising the bar. You are the fucking Michael Jordan of being the son of a bitch. I admit that I have used that many, many times in my everyday life. It's such a great line.
Yeah, there's great tension as Russ follows old girl and then walks into this crazy warehouse rave. I need that. I need someone to drop a pin. I'd like to go hang out. Glad we got some info out of Tyrone. But, you know, get your girl back season maybe could have waited a bit. Causing a scene at your girl's job is one thing, but when it's a hospital, that's wild. I wouldn't even do that. Great stuff at the bar with Russ and Marty. Marty's distracted by his home life, and Russ is cooking up a plan. Great shit. I specifically liked when Russ asked Marty, all that dick swagger you rolled and you can't spot crazy pussy. I ask myself that in the mirror every day. What is my problem? So I feel you. I love Marty asking Russ if he's sure and Russ responding, not exactly. And then Marty noticing the bullet holes in the jacket. This is just another great set of scenes.
Our Russ tells the detectives about taking a leave of absence to see his father with leukemia. He gets the key to the evidence room and snags some cocaine, swapping it out with flour. Russ admits they should have a better process with the evidence room. The detectives tell Marty they never could confirm his pops had leukemia or if anyone had ever even seen him. Russ tells him how his father met his mother and how they made it to Alaska. Russ is at a diner with Maggie, and he tells her of all the apologies Marty has and wants to see the girls when time permits. Men and women aren't supposed to work except for making kids. She says he ducks under rationalization like the rest of them, and he must have made a great husband, which triggers him, and he walks out. Russ tells Marty the lowdown on what's going on tonight. Russ tells Marty she's softening, and he can see them getting back together in a couple of months. That's his honest read. Marty is parked outside the biker bar watching out for Russ. Russ asks for Ginger, and they let him through the door, and they pat him down. He joins him around a campfire and tells them what happened in Houston, and he's working security in San Miguel. Russ tells Ginger the boys he's running with in Mexico. There's money to be made. Real money. For some reason, Marty grows impatient and enters the bar. Russ says he wants to trade coke for meth. Russ tries the meth and tells him he's working with an ex-Mex army that have Colombian connections. Russ lets Ginger try the cocaine. That ain't no fuck around shit, and he takes a snort. He lets him keep the bag. He says he's got a bulldozer of it. Ginger needs Russ for help for a big grab tonight. Ginger grabs him by the crotch, asks if he got neutered down south. He says he needs a gunslinger. Then they can talk business. All right, Bryce, next set of scenes, what'd you think?
So this undercover shit is really, I mean, the start of you, at least me, being able to tell, okay, like this is what really happened. And this is the story that they're telling or put on the official report and what they're telling these detectives. So, you know, there's some shit coming down the line. Again, had me cracking up with the montage of everything and Russ getting ready for this stint here, stealing the coke and everything else. But also just having almost this grumpy old man aspect with them living together. And then Marty's line, like looking into that little piece of glass on the wall and going like, are you supposed to see both eyes in this one? I don't know. That popped me. It was just the timing. It made me laugh. And spoiler alert, fun fact, so both, I guess, I don't know. But jump ahead 10 seconds if you don't want to hear a season 4 spoiler. But one of the slaps in the face that Pizzolatto was pissed off about were these little lines here about Russ's father in Alaska. Season 4 is set in Alaska during the 30 Days of Night, and they actually do bring up Russ's father during the investigation. So shout out friend of the show, Matt Sears, for that little tidbit.
Yeah, so Russ playing the old switcheroo with Flour for Coke. I wonder how many cops still pull that move in real life. Like, you know, some do. But I thought the security on the evidence was a little bit shit. I don't know. I know it was supposed to be like the mid-90s, but it seemed a little too easy.
So did he. He made that little comment when he was walking out, like, oh, we got to do better security process for this.
Crazy. Interesting development with the two detectives telling Marty they call bullshit on Russ' story about his dad. So that kind of raised my eyebrows a little. Marty landed a knockout blow to Russ in the diner. You must have been a great husband. Shit, woman. You know that's a touchy subject. Like, I don't blame him for getting up. But the way he got up and just walked out without saying a word, that was cold. I liked it. Tense shit when Russ is talking with the gang, but it's hilariously broken up by Marty walking in. He's supposed to be in disguise, but he looks like a cop doing cool guy cosplay. Like, shit, I don't know. He just looks so corny. The way he was wearing his hat didn't even look believable. Russ cutting the deal was like a scene from a video game. I'll do this for you, but I need something from you first. Level unlocked. Like, that was not really a negative, GTA. But it's like, yeah, I've seen this before. But solid set again. Let's finish the episode.
He said Marty looked like a cosplayer.
He did, man.
That's fucking hilarious. The look definitely didn't fit. Like, it was
because like he still had this cookie cutter haircut. Like his hair was still perfectly brushed. He just had a hat sitting on top of his head. He wasn't even really wearing the hat.
Was it like, that plain black hat? Is that what he was wearing?
Yeah, it's a plain hat. And he walks in, it's like, how do you do, fellow gang members? Like, you're so fucking corny.
That's good. All right, guys, here's the ending. Marty knocks on the door saying he's looking for his friend. Marty sees Russ leaving in a boat. They kick him out, throwing bottles at him. Russ snorts some more drugs as Discount Willie Robertson eyes him down. Russ asks how big these projects are, and they show him the cops' uniforms they'll be wearing. Tiger is going to take them there, and Russ asks questions on how they plan to execute this operation. They drag Tiger out the closet, and Marty continues listening to the police radio. Russ is dropped off, and Ginger orders everyone inside. They escort Tiger to the door. They enter the house, guns pointed at everyone. Russ checks out the rest of the house and orders a little boy into the bathtub and to not move. They have Tiger get the stash out the wall, and Russ says 30 seconds. Shit hits the fan when a brick goes through the window, and they start killing folks inside. Russ punches Ginger and the other guys in the home, and he escorts Ginger from the house. They enter another house, and Russ calls Marty to come pick them up in 90 seconds. He chases after Ginger, but has to fight off two guys first. Russ navigates them through the project stealthily as the police arrive on the scene. They hide until a lady spots them, and they have to jump a fence. Marty arrives. They get in the car and speed away. He tells Ginger he'll let him slide if he gives him the location to Ledoux. He starts punching Ginger, not talking to him like a man anymore. The episode ends with helicopter shots of the area and all hell breaking loose. Brian, pretty action-packed ending. What'd you think?
Very. And it's kind of weird that it's such a monumental part of the series for me anyway, that there's really not a whole lot for me to say. I mean, I honestly didn't even know what to say about it. And that's weird because it's such a big scene. But I mean, it's like we won a fucking Emmy here for basically this last 10 minutes. I mean, some of, if not the best television that I've ever seen. It's right up there with, I mean, I know Nico will definitely know what I'm talking about here, but that one shot of the hallway scene in the first season of Daredevil, man, definitely. And but it also reminded me of that David Ayer movie, End of Watch, with Jake Gyllenhaal. If you haven't seen that shit, like the whole movie is like this last 15 minutes. Like, check it out right there with, if not Ayer's best movie that he's done. But man, it's just, like I said, it's just so great. And the ending overhead shot of the neighborhood, the chaos, it's just, there's so much happened. Yet, what can I say? I mean, you've got to watch it. And that's terrible review talk, I know, but you know, maybe you have something I didn't, Dustin, but it's hard to relay that.
No, it was. I've only got like three bullet points here. So the gang's little plan doesn't really make sense to me, to be honest with you. Like, Rust is there presenting the deal of the lifetime. They can make real money, but they still want to go knock off these small-time drug dealers. I mean, granted, they didn't know Rust's idea was bogus, but I don't know. It's like he's sitting there presenting the deal of a lifetime, and they're like, yeah, we got to go knock these people in the hood off first. I don't know. But holy shit, the tension when Rust has to call an audible and ditch their drug heist, incredible scenes here. I mean, he calls an absolute riot in the projects and then beat the shit out of his former running buddy. This finish was on fire. I'm already looking forward to episode 5 at this point. And the final six minute sequence, which follows Rust through the housing project, it consists of only one very long take. Hundreds of staff were required to film the scene, including hidden makeup artists who had to apply makeup in the seconds where the camera was focused elsewhere. That's incredible. That's good shit. So yeah, we didn't have a lot to say about it, but we can't short sell how good it was.
Yeah, the camera work was amazing in that in the end of this episode. It was fantastic.
Yep.
And I love when Russ just snaps. I was like, all right, I'm done talking to you like a man. He starts beating his ass. That was yeah. That was good stuff.
He's like, fuck it. I should have already did this.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say except really good episodes, Brian. I mean, damn. For like, sure. We kind of got a mean YouTube comment today. I'll just touch on it, but I blocked the fucker. You know, he's like, I've already watched the series. What are y'all bringing to the table? You know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, listen, man, I didn't watch this shit until like a week ago. And our listeners like, you know, rewatching these episodes or watching this for the first time with us. So that's why we're doing this show, brother. And
hang on. I like to think that I personally have brought some laughs to this episode. So come on. What are you talking about?
Why might have gotten us canceled during this episode. But
how? Yeah. I quoted what she said.
I'm just joking. I was just joking.
Anywho, yeah, this is real. This, Brian, I'm struggling, man. Like, every time I watch just two episodes, I want to like, all right, let me just finish the whole damn season again since I'm already watching it. I don't know how Dustin like just gone ahead and finished it yet.
These two episodes did get me to where I was like, no, I'm not waiting until the next review. Like, I went ahead and watched episode 5. And if I wasn't leaving at 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday to go to New Orleans, I'd probably go ahead and watch the rest of the series. But I'll have to wait. Oh, and yeah, you know, man. I said the ratings the last episode, so I'll do it here. So episode 3, I had it at about a 9 as well. But episode 4, I gave it a 9.5. Really strong shit.
Oh, yeah. Really good. All right. We appreciate y'all listening. All the nice comments we get, we appreciate that for sure. We'll shout out Christina Tower one more time. We reviewed her pick last week, Final Girl Dunner. She chose The Mist. That episode will be dropping soon. Camper Level Reoccurring, Nina, Michelle Mirza, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn. Shout out my guy. Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home podcast, and Dana Tucker. Hey, we really appreciate y'all's donations. It means a lot to us. We know times are really tough financially, and y'all do take a big burden off of us. I promise you, we don't make any money off of this, and if we do make anything, it just goes into, you know, paying for the podcast. It's not coming out of our pocket. So we really appreciate you guys. I'm looking forward to episodes 5 and 6 next week. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy watching the show, so I'm really excited. Y'all have a good one. We'll be back next week.
I've already seen this, so what are you bringing to it?
Just want to remind everybody.